out if you've ever been through some sort of change. It's the only real guarantee in life, isn't it? No matter what you do, you're bound to go through all sorts of changes, both in your professional and personal life. Given we know change is bound to occur, you'd think we'd be better at dealing with it. But I know, as you know, that sometimes change just doesn't feel good. Integrative psychologist Leanne Hall knows all about how to deal with change, from good changes like better nutrition to more exercise, to the ones we never want to go through, like getting a divorce or losing someone we love or being made redundant. We talk through it all here so we can learn to deal with change better. Here's Leanne. Leanne, how do you feel about change? People would assume because you're a psychologist, you'd be really adept at dealing with it. But does it throw you for a loop like it does the rest of us?
It used to. Probably when I was younger, I think it did. But after you go through your first divorce, I think you sort of get used to it. I quite like change. I find it invigorating and I feel like I'm alive when I go through change. But I know, you know, for most people it is very, very, very difficult and very challenging.
Why is it so hard? Why does it feel so crap sometimes?
Look, I think we like routine, we like predictability, we like structure. We all do. I think it's human nature. And I think it gives us that false illusion of control and of knowing what's going to happen. And I think change is that reminder that we're not in control of the future. We're not in control of what's going to happen next. So the mere thought of change and having to go through it is just facing that reality of, oh crap, I can't plan for everything. I can't plan for every single what if. So it is quite confronting from that point of view, I think. And I think it's not so much the fear of change, it's the fear of our inability to cope with it, which is a bit different, and our fear of not being able to plan for it and not knowing how to handle it.
There are some changes that we can control. So let's start with those. And they're usually good changes associated with habits and behaviours, things like cleaning up the way we eat or exercising more. You and I have talked here previously about not falling into a diet trap. What is the difference between simply cleaning up your diet and the way that you eat and making some positive changes and not falling into that trap?
Look, in one word, sustainability. You know, I think diets in particular are about restriction and deprivation. So you find that you end up in that vicious cycle of having rigid rules, depriving yourself, and then it's just not sustainable. So inevitably something happens and you break a rule. You might go out for dinner, it might be Christmas season or whatever, and you break a rule, and then you kind of have that feeling of failure again. So it really sets people up to fail, as opposed to making small changes over a longer period of time, which are sustainable. So things that you can fit into your lifestyle and things that you can keep going. If you can't maintain a change, then what's the point? So it is about making sustainable changes that fit into your lifestyle that you can keep going the long term, which might mean that if you're looking for weight loss, it comes off a bit slower. But all the research tells us that if that's done that way, it's a lot more sustainable than dropping, 10 kilos in 2 weeks and feeling great for a little period of time until it all comes back on again.
Can you give me an example of that on a day-to-day basis? So perhaps rather than some of the headlines that we see on the cover of particularly women's magazines is, cut out this and this and this and this and you'll lose X over this period of time, as opposed to what's a more sustainable change that you might recommend somebody make if they were looking to just feel a little bit better about what they're putting into their body?
I guess the first thing is that what works for one person won't necessarily work for the next one. We're all different. Our biology and our genetics are all very, very different. So it is important to remember that, because I think it's easy to pick what someone else has done and look at the changes that they've made and think, oh, I might just do that. I think with those kinds of programs, it's too much too soon. You can't change everything in one go. So if you're wanting to make something sustainable work for you, then you've got to look at, all right, well, what's my lifestyle currently look like? Am I working 9 to 5? Do I work part-time? Do I have children? What capacity do I have to do what that person has done? You know, you might hate getting up early, so boot camps mightn't be the thing for you. You might hate gyms, so joining a gym is not going to be the right thing for you. So it's picking what's going to fit for you, what works for your lifestyle, and doing it sort of slowly. So I might say to someone, look, rather than try and change your diet and start an exercise program next week, why don't you actually just start with getting your food right? So that might mean let's pick a time during the week where you work on your food planning for the week. So it might be a Sunday afternoon, it might be a Monday if you've got Monday off or whatever. Sit down at the beginning of the week, look at, all right, what's my week look like? How can I plan my meals and my food more effectively so I'm making healthier choices and not letting my emotions rule all the time? And then get that going. And then after a couple of weeks, then start looking at exercise options. So just do it little bit by little bit and adjust, because I think if we try and do too much too soon, we're forcing ourselves to adjust to something far bigger than what we can. And that's when it's not sustainable. And again, we end up setting ourselves up to fail.
You're one of those people that seems to really love exercise. There seems to be this idea of move because you can that seems to come to you really naturally. When we are ready to start bringing in a little bit more movement, what's your advice to people who don't feel that way? For lots of us, exercise is a total punish and we will do anything in our power to avoid it. How do you get started when that's kind of how you feel about it?
I don't always feel motivated. I had a week last week where I just wrote it off and said, look, I'm just not getting there this week, so I'm going to park it and just get everything else I need to get done. So you can't be motivated all the time. And I think even the people that look like they're loving exercise at every minute, they're not. They're really, really not. I know some people that are amazing athletes, but I know absolutely for a fact that they have long periods of time often where they just can't get out the door. So I think it's giving yourself a break first. I think for me, exercise isn't something that adds on to my life. It's something that's a part of my life. And what I mean by that is it's where I catch up with my girlfriends. It's social time. It's relaxing time as well. So, you know, we might plan a run or we might meet at the pool, do a bit of a swim set and then have a nice coffee afterwards. So it's not just about the exercise for me. It's about so much more than that. And it's about mental health as well. So I think for people that struggle, I'd be first saying to them, what it is that you're trying to do? Are you really interested in the type of exercise that you're choosing to do? If not, don't do it. Just don't do it. As I said, don't join a gym if you hate it. Join a sport. You know, look at a team sport. You don't have to be the best at it either. It's not about coming first or getting a podium finish at a run that you do. I never get on a damn podium. It's far out. I'm Miss Average. And I love being Miss Average because I don't have any expectations. You know, I get in there and I have fun and I run with my friends. So I think it's finding out what your why is. And if it's about health, then who gives a stuff where you come? Who cares if you come first or not? Just find a group of like-minded people, find a tribe and join it for more than just weight loss or more than health, but do it for social reasons, do it for mental health reasons, how to de-stress, that kind of thing. Don't just make it about weight.
That's such good advice. One of the places in life where we tend to go through quite a lot of change is in the workplace. And that can be something simple like changing teams or learning to deal with new team members who aren't quite like you. How do you recommend that we do that better? Because it seems that there's sort of a different set of rules in the workplace with how we are able to react to change.
There is. And sometimes, if not most of the time, the change is imposed on us. You know, when we talk about lifestyle and health, then we're in control of a lot of those changes. But when it comes to work, the power has shifted in terms of it's the employers that tend to have the power now. And that's why it's tough. And also it's often our livelihood. It's how we pay the bills. So change in the workplace, I think it's easy for me to say be flexible. That'd be a simple answer, wouldn't it? But I think we've got to nurture ourselves and again, be nicer to ourselves and understand that when change is imposed on us in the workplace, that often there is a period of adjustment. And that does mean maybe pulling back on the expectations we have on ourselves. It might mean that we have to lean on family more. It might mean that we have to focus on getting sleep and actually looking after the basics and allowing ourselves that time to adjust and form new habits and new connections and that kind of thing. But look, the reality is it's tough. The workforce is very tough when those changes happen.
The other end, I suppose, of the spectrum is changing jobs altogether or losing our job, something that lots of people are really fearful of is sort of being made redundant. What's your advice on dealing with a big change like that?
You know, I think we've seen, I think it's around a 45% increase in redundancies in the last 2 years in this country. So job insecurity is a very, very real thing for most of the workforce. And although we've got a fairly conservative unemployment rate, I think it's around 5%, I think most of our workforce is made up of casuals and contract workers. So, and of those that are in full-time employment, the security isn't there anymore. I know when my dad kind of worked, you know, you get a job and you're in it for 20, 30 years, but I think the economy is changing and we're moving away from those kinds of industries and towards industries where part-time casual employment is certainly preferred. So, you know, I think dealing with redundancies in a major, my husband went through it and it was crushing, absolutely crushing. It's de-skilling. The grief that was attached to that, I think, was very, very real. So I think there is a lot of emotional and psychological grief that you need to process, particularly if you are made redundant, for example. I think you've got to put it into a larger context and realize it's not you, that this is our economy, this is the changing workforce. Take it away from yourself, because I think inevitably you feel that sense of absolute, complete and utter failure when you're made redundant. You think it's you. It doesn't matter how it's presented to you. You can't help but personalize and make it about you. So put it in a bigger context. Allow yourself time to grieve and allow yourself time to adjust and be sad, because I think that that's a very real thing, and people don't give themselves enough credit for that. And then as much as you want to reflect on the past, you don't want to dwell on it. So it is important then to get on the front foot and say, okay, well, what can I do next? How can I make myself employable? How can I make myself desirable in the workplace? Is it about retraining? You know, is it about shifting my perspective or going into something similar but different? And relying on the connections that you've got and reaching out, I think, to those connections is important.
How about change in our personal lives? Because that tends to be some of the most emotional of changes that we'll go through. Let me throw a few scenarios at you and pick your brain on how best to deal with each of them. So the first one is going through a breakup or divorce.
Oh, it's nasty. Again, I sound like a broken record, but it is very much about grief. You know, it's never a good time of the year in particular to go through that kind of stuff, and particularly when it's thrown at you and you can't anticipate it and it comes out of nowhere. I do think that you do go through a point where you think it's you, and I think that's natural. So you do want to sit in that for a bit. But I don't think it's a case of, I think we've got to be careful not to just go into denial and avoidance with that stuff, because I think it is very easy to say, oh, well, whatever, and move on. And then particularly when it comes to relationship breakups, we tend to then just perpetuate the problem and make the same mistakes. Relationships do take two to work, and often it does take two for it to end, as much as it's hard for people to hear that. You know, I think it is important to have the honesty within yourself to sit there and say, all right, well, what part did I play in this? And it might be as simple as saying, I've attracted the wrong partner. That's not the right person for me. I need to recognize what's good for me and use that moving forward. It's not easy. And again, I think it's so important to lean on your social support, lean on people around you, and know that it's okay to be vulnerable and it's okay to struggle.
It seems like a lot of people sit too far one way or the other. And by that, I mean, they're either like, it's all my fault. Mm. Nobody's ever going to love me. This one hasn't worked out, right through to not my problem, their problem. Thank you. Next.
Yeah.
How do you find the happy medium? How do you kind of coach yourself around some of those kind of triggers that you just mentioned about getting yourself into that sort of happy medium zone that's psychologically healthy for you, so you can grieve it, sit in it, as you say, and then move forward in a really healthy way?
Yeah. Look, I think probably breakups trigger the core fear that most of us have, which is abandonment and rejection and that we're unlovable. So we have some pretty powerful defenses against things like that. And it can be falling completely into victim mode, or it can be falling completely into blame mode. And I think that's perfectly reasonable to do that. So I guess the starting point is to say, that's okay. Sit in that for a bit if you have to. But then it's okay. You've got to give yourself a bit of a wake up and say, hang on a minute. What do I want moving forward here? Do I want to sit in this and let it kind of dictate my happiness and my future? Or do I want to actually sit with this and look back and say, what can I get out of this? And how do I move forward through this? And this is where social supports can be really, really helpful, because it's very easy if we isolate ourselves to get stuck in it. But if we lean on the people around us, sometimes they're the ones that can gently nurture and push us very gently out of that and get us to kind of think about, well, all right, well, what was good about that relationship? What worked? At what point did it go off the rails? And if you don't know that, then you can also look back and say, well, why didn't it work? And what would you, if you had a choice, you know, what could be different? But yeah, I think we've got to give ourselves time to sit in that initial defensiveness, whatever that might be, because I think that's human nature.
Another form of breakup that we often tend to go through is one with friendships, and they're the divorces of the worst kind.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly as you get older, I think, and your friendship circle tends to shrink a little bit, and you are spending more time doing other things, perhaps with your family or more time at work. How do we kind of make ourselves feel a little bit more robust against those sorts of changes? Because they hurt.
They do. And I think what makes them different is that you don't necessarily get the closure you get with a romantic breakup. You know, romantic breakups kind of end, you know, but friendships can fade out. And it's really, really hard to know what to do in that situation. Do I confront the person? Do I just not call them anymore? It's hard. It's hard to know, has this relationship ended? And I think my rule of thumb is, if you find that you're the one constantly giving in a friendship, or you find that you're the one doing all the chasing all the time and you never get anything back, you do need to look at, is that investment worth it? You know, or should I be investing perhaps in other relationships where it's actually more sort of equal? How do you make yourself more robust? Well, I think you know, again, I think it's about looking at what you're getting out of friendships. And I don't mean that in a, you know, what am I getting out of my friendship with you, Casey? But I just mean, you know, if you're the one that's reaching out all the time and you're not getting anything back, and you find that every time you meet with that person, you're left feeling drained, you're left feeling like maybe you're not good enough. I think it's looking at, you know, do people drain you, or do they fill your cup? And true friendships do drain you sometimes, but it swings and roundabouts, you know. And I think at the end of the day, it's worth it, because you know that they'll be there for you in a heartbeat if you need them to be. So yeah, I think it's about not over investing in those connections that just make us feel like crap, and focusing on where we put our energy.
What about dealing with grief? So grieving a parent or losing somebody that you love, that can be, I don't know that there's any way of coaching or preparing yourself to go through that. But what are some things to remember if that's something that you are going through to help support you a little bit better?
That there's no such thing as normal when it comes to grief, that emotions you don't just move through a linear line when it comes to grief. You don't just go through, they'll sort of talk about the Kubler-Ross stages of grief, which is denial, and it doesn't work that way. You can go through four stages in one day and then go backwards. So I think it's knowing that grief is a roller coaster, and that roller coaster looks very different for everybody. It's knowing that you are going to have times when you feel euphoric and happy, and that doesn't mean that you're not grieving. You can laugh when you're watching a movie, but that doesn't mean you're not grieving. And I think probably importantly, it is about that self-care. And it is also sometimes about recognizing that certain forms of grief you never get over. If you're losing a parent, or God forbid, a child or a loved one, you never get over it. You learn to live with it. So often, you know, these people went, I lost my mum 7 years ago, you know, and it leaves a gaping hole in your life. And you do spend some time immediately after that trying to fill it. And you find other people to try and fill it. Oh, that person might fill that gap. That person might fill that gap. And then you realize, actually, you know what? No one's going to fill that gap. I just have to learn that that gap's always going to be in my life now. And so you create room for the gap, if that makes sense, rather than trying to fill it.
It's interesting, because it's something I think that we kind of tend to psychologically avoid, because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Nobody likes talking about it. We certainly don't like feeling grief. However, it's something that all of us are going to go through multiple times in our experience. I don't know that there's any way of getting around how truly awful it feels. How can you best support yourself, given that you've been through something so personal, on reflection?
Yeah.
What were the things that helped you the best?
Definitely my husband was amazing. And I think part of why he was amazing is he just let me feel what I had to feel. And then he picked up the slack. So little things became exhausting for me. So looking after my three-year-old son, as much as I love him to bits, it just all became too much. So he just, without even asking me, would just pick up the slack and just kind of do it. You know, I had friends that would just bring meals around for me. And initially you kind of feel like, I don't want to impose on people, but you learn to lean into that stuff. You have to learn to lean in and be grateful for that. And I think giving yourself time. I tried to go back to work too soon. And I remember rocking up to work, and I was in my clinic at the time, and beautiful ladies at reception were just gorgeous. And I kind of walked into my office and looked at my list of who I was seeing for the day, and I just cried. I remember her name was Vivian, came into my office and said, "Darling, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to just sit at home." And she said, "You shouldn't be here. Go home." And I think having people around you that give you permission to just be, I think was undoubtedly the most powerful thing for me. And I didn't have to explain myself. They just seemed to know, and just seemed to know to just let me nurture and take the time to, you know, come back when I was ready.
What do you think is, to that point, what do you think is the most powerful thing that somebody can do who is supporting somebody in grief? We've been through a similar situation with my mother-in-law this year. And one of the kindest, and it certainly was coming from a good place, but one of the, to be frank, most useless things that people would say to us throughout that time is, "Let me know if there's anything I can do." And you'd always say, "Thanks so much. I really appreciate the offer." But chances of me calling you and saying, "Hey, actually, I've thought of something that you can do and here's what it is," it's just not going to happen. And so I think one of the most powerful things that people can do without imposing is saying, "Look, I'm going to do something for you this
week." Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
100%. I would agree with that. And I think it's also important not to judge people and not to assume they're okay, even though they look okay. you know, I think grief's one of those things that you do have to just get through it. You go through a period of, you know, when you have the funeral and everyone's around you and you're getting the flowers and that's all wonderful. Then people get back into their lives and you have to get back into your life and you're so not okay. But the expectation is you have to be. And I think it's important that just because all that attention's now gone and people are moving on, that person is probably less okay now than they were immediately after the loss. So I think continually checking in on people and, you know, getting them out of the house, you know, I think that's important too. Like I think a powerful thing for me was when friends would say, come over for dinner. And I'd say, oh, I'm really not. She goes, I don't care. If you're not in the mood. You're not the life of the party. I just want you to come over for dinner. And I'm like, all right. And people didn't put any expectations on you, but they were there in a way that they were making time for you without judging you and without assuming that you're okay. I feel like that was important anyway.
Mm, I agree. A last one. Having a baby. Podcast is not a visual medium, but if people could see me right now, that they could see that I am literally about to have a baby. It's my second time, so I know what I'm in for. You've done this a couple of times.
Yes.
What's your advice on dealing with that change? Because that is a biggie.
It is huge. It's probably one of the biggest life adjusting things you can go through. I think because it changes everything. It changes your relationship with your partner. It basically puts you in a completely different life stage to friends that don't have kids, for example. So my advice would be, I think probably when I had my first child, I had someone that said to me, my best bit of advice to you, and actually I found this useful, was get out of the house every day. Because it's very, very easy to, you know, when you've got a newborn at home, that just the days rolls into the nights and you don't know what day it is. You don't even know what time it is. You're in your pajamas all the time and, you know, that's okay sometimes. But I feel like it was good for me to say, right, even if it's just for a walk, I'm going to get out of the house. Force me to have a shower and get changed. And I think, you know, don't forget your partner. You know, I think we can get so engrossed in this beautiful little bundle, but it's theirs too. And I think sometimes learning how to sit back and let them take control sometimes, they mightn't change the nappy right. they mightn't mix the formula perfectly or whatever, or they mightn't know how to wind the baby the way you can. But what's the worst that can happen? And I think sometimes it's important to learn to let go a bit. Let grandma take the baby. Let auntie or uncle take the baby for a couple of hours. My mum used to say to me, just drop Tyler around here. Just drop her over. And I'd drop her over there with the pyjamas on and a nappy that I hadn't even changed. And she'd just take the prance. She'd take the capsule from me and she'd just say, go. Get in the car. Go. I don't care. Go for a coffee. And I'd walk around the shop sometimes aimlessly for a couple of hours. I didn't have any money, so I'd get a coffee and just wander around. But sometimes just that really helped. So lean on other people and don't be afraid. Stay with dad or grandma for an hour or two. And sometimes it's the best thing you can do for your sanity. Don't feel guilty for it.
And try and get some sleep.
And try. Yeah, that's sleep. It's elusive, isn't it?
Yeah. Ask me again in a month. I'll let you know how the sleep thing's going for me.
Get it when you can. I think probably that was the other bit of advice people said to me. You sleep when the baby sleeps. I couldn't do that. You know, I found it impossible to sleep during the day because you've got too much to do. But I don't know. That's a tough one. I think, you know, inevitably that's probably the biggest struggle, I think, is the sleep deprivation. If you can sleep when your baby sleeps, I think you're ahead, but most of us struggle.
Yeah. Mm. Good luck and Godspeed.
Oh, yeah, good luck with that. Oh, dear. They grow out of it. Yes. The newborn phase doesn't last. That's the other thing. You know, you think when you're in it, it's going to last forever. And then before you know it, they're toddlers and, you know, they're kind of a bit more self-sufficient, independent, and you think, where did that stage go? They're not little newborns anymore.
Then you've got a whole other set of problems to deal with.
That's right, you do. Never ends.
18 years plus.
Yeah, that's right. This still doesn't end. Mine's got a driver's license and doing the HSC next year, so that's a whole new set of worries and stresses, isn't it?
But, wow.
Mm.
Best job in the world, right?
It is.
You didn't look convinced.
It's the one I feel like I'm probably the worst at sometimes, to be honest. But anyway.
I just love her. If you do too and you're looking for something else to listen to after this, double back to my other interview with Leanne where we talk more about weight loss and the dieting trap as well as relationships, both, as you just heard, areas that are no strangers to change. That's it for this episode of Wealthy. I'm Casey Barros. Stay happy, healthy and wealthy, and I will see you next time. Please note, the views expressed in this series are the experts' own and shouldn't replace personal medical advice.